You don't build a country overnight. These things take years. And so the Renters' Bill of Rights is going to be one of those things that demoralizes Canadians and helps them keep down so that we can bring in more immigrants to fill all the houses.
Ooh-wee.
What is going on?
What is going on?
So much going on. I don't even know what the hell's going on.
I want to give a shout out. I did a deal last night with an agent named Stephanie. Her husband listens to the show. So I want to shout out to Stephanie's husband.
Do we know what Stephanie's husband name is? Is that his claim to fame? I am Stephanie's husband.
Stephanie's husband. He's got a great agent. She was professional. I even got my deposit first thing this morning, which was like the earliest deposit I think I've ever seen delivered.
Quickest.
And I'm super happy. Her clients are happy. My clients are happy. Two other buyers are not happy because they lost out on a great house in a great area. But either way.
Can we have some details? Good area? Good part of town?
Yeah, Woodbine and Danforth.
What kind of price point?
Detached house.
Detached house, Woodbine and Danforth. Oh, that's got to be pretty
1.3. 1.3, detached house.
1.3. What kind of lot size is a 1.3 at Woodbine and Danforth for a nice
house? It's a mutual drive. It's a mutual drive.
That's not a great
some updating.
Thing. Yeah.
And, you know, overall, it was a good house, right? So bottom line is it's sold.
That's not a lot size. What was the lot size?
Lot size is like, you know, you're making me look like I don't know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were evading the question on purpose.
Something like that. It's like 25 by 100. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. So that's good. So look at you selling a house every goddamn week in a downturn while we have a housing crisis.
Well, this week I was away.
Winning awards. TK won a crazy award.
I sold three this week because I was away on vacation. So when you're on vacation, this is what happens. You have
I gotta go on vacation.
But I had one deal fall apart, and I'm trying to put it back together. That's the worst.
What kind of deal?
It's a 3-unit property in Scarborough. The person who bought it, you know, paid a pretty penny for it. We were really happy. I thought, wow, I'm gonna help this lady who's, you know, in a tight spot, and her financing. She needed an extension. When she asked for an extension, we were like, you know, can't you just firm up? And then she's like, you know what? I don't even want the house anymore. And sent us a mutual release. So I think it was because she couldn't get her financing. And right. I think that it was because, you know, she was maybe having some cold feet. So I'm hoping to put the deal back together. That's always what I want. Try to get the, you know, best price for my sellers. But either way, I put it back on the market. So we'll see what happens.
Back on the market. So how often is that happening right now?
Not often, but it does happen. I had another one that firmed up this week where there was an extension. And my client had some intel, like he knew somebody who knew the buyer. So he's got all this intel. He's calling me. He's freaking out. I'm at the awards in Vegas for Remax, and it's the night, like the big night. And he's freaking out. He's telling me that he was right. He knew this was all a scam, that his friend told him that the guy doesn't have his. He was going on and on and on and on. Right. And he's a buddy of mine. Right. So I'm just kind of like joking around with him, and we're having a good time. But he's texting me like every 5 minutes to tell me how he was right and I was wrong. And so then at like 9:30, because I kept telling him, I said, they got till midnight. I said, just, you know, just chill. And I'm trying to like do the award event and stuff like that, awards event. And at 9:15, I just got a text, you know, notice of fulfillment sent, conditions waived. And I was like, told ya.
Whoa.
Yeah. So people are struggling. Financing's tough. It's not easy.
Financing's getting tougher.
So you have to be very diligent as a buyer's agent. So I put a buyer deal together this week. So, you know, like I did my job, like it's really simple, you know, like get them pre-approved, go and find out what their buying, you know, capabilities are. Talk to the mortgage broker yourself. If it's a complicated situation where you got, you know, you can't get them pre-approved, like it's a B lender or something like that, but like really know what you're talking about. When people come to me, it's so common that the agents are just like, well, we still got to take them to the bank. And well, we're not sure. And we got to do this. Like a week long condition is, you know, enough to be able to get somebody approved if they're pre-approved, right?
If
with the deal.
Pre-approved, maybe.
A commercial deal, you know, 3 weeks, you know, no problem. Like you should be able to get the financing done. If you got all your ducks in a row, you provided all the documentation.
I don't think that that's true for commercial Definitely not for development land right now.
Not private deals like what you're doing.
It's crazy though. Even a regular
loans are happening right now in a shorter time frame, like six weeks. I'm hearing, and it was like
6 weeks.
It was like 6 months before. But I'm hearing from all the multifamily guys that they're using 6 weeks of financing condition, and they're actually getting the MLI Select CMHC financing done in that time.
Maybe for a gigantic company that's got all their ducks
No, really? Small investors on buildings all over Canada. Yes.
What?
I know. So this is a really quick turnaround time, which is surprising, but this is what I'm hearing from multiple people. So I know that it's true and that they're actually, having this done. Other than that,
they can't be high ratio mortgages then. They got to be pretty easy and straightforward to get in 6 weeks a CMHC loan. I mean, that doesn't sound right to me, but nothing does right now.
Who am I?
Who the hell are you?
I'm not giving the money out. That's for sure. If I was lending the money, I'd do it in 6 days.
I had somebody call me looking for some money this week, wanted to borrow some money. I was like,
that's what happens when you're
the hell's going on
the
here
Canadian real estate show. People are just, they just assume because we have so many viewers that YouTube is just paying us so much money. Now, on that note, if you're listening to this show and you've decided that you're interested in the content, maybe you're not too sure if you want to listen to it every week. Maybe you just want to see what happens next week to figure out if this is something that you would be interested in. It's a very soft commitment. We're not asking you to get married. We're just asking that you subscribe to the channel, that you like the video. And if you really, think that this is a great channel and you want to let us know, you can let us know in the comments and we will reply. And if you really want to support us, if you're like, I've double subscribe, I've triple subscribe, and I want to one up Don, because Don is triple subscribed, you can share the video.
Ooh.
And you can share it on your social media. You can share it on your email list. You can just share it with your 14-year-old son who lives three bedrooms over from you. Just share the video, share the content, and we appreciate you. All right, back to our episode. Daryl, what's on the docket today, Daryl? Daryl's always got a plan.
I've got a plan here.
Have you noticed? He's looking down at his plan right now, ready to talk about it.
So many topics. I don't know what's going on with my mic here, though.
It sounds fine.
So many topics that I want to talk about, and I don't know where to start. I know exactly where I want to start. This Baltimore Bridge situation, TK. Are you appraised of this situation?
Give me the load. I heard about it and I was just like, taxes are a little bit
bridge taxes. What the hell are you talking about? Okay, so Baltimore, the container ship smashed into the bridge.
Yes.
And destroyed the bridge.
Yes.
Okay. And what's interesting about this bridge, do you remember a little while back this little canal we had never heard of before that ended up being one of the biggest shipping lanes on the planet, right? And one freighter in the Suez Canal that kind of turned sideways for a week really screwed up inflation for a lot of people, right? You remember that?
Yeah.
That was one of the big reasons why we had
That's what they were telling us. Right? I don't know. That's what they said.
We couldn't get our products. They said it was
the ship's fault. Go ahead.
Well, but this bridge, TK, is magnitudes larger than losing that shipping lane for a week, because this is an extraordinary port in the USA. This bridge ties all kinds of really important stuff that gets shipped across that bridge on a daily. That thing is gone, man. Gone. Like, nothing is getting shipped over that bridge for a long time. And so, while we're trying to fight inflation here, this is going to be major. Not that these wars don't have an effect. And surprisingly, with all these wars going on, the price of oil is relatively stable. This is a huge diesel shipping lane. This is going to, I think, have all kinds of ramifications on inflation, which I don't even know what happens with Canadian home prices if inflation rips again. I'm so confused with how things work right now that I don't know what's going on. And now we went, you see articles of the Fed saying maybe no rate hikes. So like the world's in this weird state of flux. This Baltimore thing that you barely even know what's going on is so, it's like you not knowing what happened, I think, for 9/11, TK. Whoa, hey, ow.
Yeah, like, comment, subscribe. I'm double subscribed. Do it yourself. Didn't get to fix the show, though. Didn't get to fix the show.
Please subscribe. And
that's what it feels like. But what I'm used to is the over-sensationalization of these type of issues that are around the world, where people feel like the world is about to end because they're waiting for that one major event. The Suez Canal was different because you had a lot of international shipping that was going through there, that was coming from places that were, you know, vital to our, you know, our infrastructure, our businesses, the just-in-time shipping type of format that companies have been using
from the other side of the planet.
From the other side of the planet. When something comes here locally, I mean, you know, they have other options. Does it increase the cost? Of course.
Time. You
know? But if it's cost. if you've been able to get it to North America, and they need to be able to,
half the battle,
port that ship somewhere else and get that trailer off the shipping container off the ship and truck it across the USA in a different way, or Canada, or whatever it is, you know, there's a solution there. You know, yeah, it might be more
nothing
expensive.
Burger. Okay.
I believe that it's going to have much less impact than people are making it out to be. But I understand why.
Well, you heard it here first.
The comments were going to say, you know, TK, you're just not informed well enough. Yeah. Why do you keep just focusing on selling all that real estate in Toronto? You should get out and leave.
Daryl, take off your tinfoil hat.
And Daryl's always in line with my thinking, and TK's not. But I'm just, I'm not an overreactor. When the time comes and things start to look a little bit, you know, grim, I'll be right there alongside you guys saying, I told you so.
That's right. I saw this coming.
That bridge was key.
That was major. We talked about it.
Cornerstone of our whole economy.
Okay, fine. So the Baltimore Bridge, big nothing burger. That's fine. What about this?
Give me another one.
Well, we should probably talk about real estate, right?
This is the part of the show where Daryl stumps TK. Come on.
Stumps TK. What about the solar eclipse? You want to talk about the solar eclipse next week? No biggie.
The solar eclipse. Okay. Don't you remember when the solar eclipse happened when you were young?
Yeah, but I don't remember them telling me to like stock up on food for 3 days and like get batteries.
Do you remember Y2K?
Y2K, I remember.
What did they tell you about Y2K?
I was in Aruba for Y2K.
I was in Florida. What happened? Yeah.
Nothing
happened.
Nothing happens ever.
It's just the way
people
are.
The real estate crash doesn't come.
They love to talk about the things that are going to happen, okay?
Nothing ever happens.
You know what you do on the solar eclipse?
What?
You stay inside.
Be on the computer like you normally are, right?
You do what you got to do. Don't go out there and look at the sun. It's going to burn your eyes.
Boil your eyes now.
I haven't met anybody that happened to them, but I'm telling you it's going to happen to you, so don't do it.
I'm saying boil.
Boil. It's going to
boil the water in your eyes.
But just please stay inside on the solar eclipse day. And don't think that it's going to be the end of the world. And don't buy 3 days worth of food. Okay.
Ahead, so just as nutty, we have the prime minister coming out with the Tenants' Bill of Rights. That has something to do with real estate, doesn't it?
I love the Tenants' Bill of Rights.
What is it? Renters' Bill of Rights? Tenants' Bill of Rights?
Whatever it is.
Renters'
Bill of Rights.
Bill
tenants.
Of Rights for tenants
is so.
What do you think, TK?
It's so overrated because it actually works against the tenants. Let's just it's going to work against the tenants.
Yeah.
If your rental history ends up being on your credit bureau, right? And they're saying, you know, good tenants are going to be rewarded for their payment history, right? What about bad tenants?
Exactly.
What about the people who are missing their rent payments and then it affects their credit bureau?
What about borderline tenants that are like, it's only 3 days, bro.
Now,
it's only 3 days.
Who's responsible for reporting something to a credit bureau? When you're dealing with TD Bank and TD Bank says that you're 90 days late on your credit bureau, what does the credit agency, like, how do they treat that? They're like, TD says you're late. You're late, man.
There goes
pay
your credit.
Pay your freaking bills here, all right? Yeah. Now, my tenant... He calls me all the time. You know, he's I got to change his light bulbs. I got to fix the squeaking door hinges, all that kind of stuff. He's paying rent on time every month. Yeah. Man, I don't like that guy.
Son of
just
a
gonna,
bitch.
Just going to report
he
that he's
calls.
Not making his rent payment anymore. You know,
you can't do
gonna
that.
I'm just going to report it and say, you know what? Sorry, I checked the wrong box. I didn't know.
Oops. Yeah.
There's tons of issues with this type of crap. You know.
Whoa,
there's,
that's an interesting curveball.
So they can't leave
so devious.
The, you can't leave the tenant's credit history in the hands
up
of
to
the
landlords. No.
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 You know. So bottom line is this: it's a great political play for Trudeau to
both
come
sides
up here with his you know.
Both sides?
Well, they want to support tenants. They want tenants to vote for them.
But you don't have to be a genius to see that this helps the landlords more than the tenants.
In the scenario that I gave. But, you know, having their rental history, providing more support for tenants to get their
credit
legal
score
counsel.
Going up because of the payments. That's a big one for people, no?
But there's already... is it?
Is it not?
Is it, though?
Is
what
it
the hell?
Not?
The bank is going to be like, okay...
Now I can sell you a house, bro.
You've been making your rent payments of $1,700. That's fantastic. You make $30,000, Joe. We're not giving you a mortgage.
Where's the money coming from, Joe?
No, I don't care that your landlord accepted your rent payment every single month.
Hmm.
Right?
Hmm.
You only got $5,000 down payment, Joe. How are we going to give you a mortgage with only $5,000 down? You can't even pay the closing costs.
I think it'll have a great effect on the landlord-tenant board waiting list. I think all
This is in disguise,
right?
Secretly, powers that be are trying to make it so tenants who don't pay their rent will affect their credit a lot easier. But there is lots of other places where tenants' non-payment of rents are on their credit bureau. You can have that judgment granted.
Yeah, but you got to have that board meeting to have the judgment to get it onto their credit, right? By then, they have another place and they're already screwing some other guy, right?
Yeah.
So, if you are one of the borderline, you're a renter and you know you're a renter and you're one of those guys that fucks around, you know, you pay 10 days late, 4 days late, you hold back because you know the rules and then, you know, you're just one of those fuckers. Take them to the tenant board. You don't pay for 4 months until they say you got to pay. Like, there's people like that all over the place fucking around. Those people are going to start to think twice, I think, about it. And all the people that are sitting there going, you know what? I heard on TikTok that if I don't pay, I just have to wait a year at the landlord tenant board. And then, you know, I'll move on somewhere else and they can't do anything to me. Those people are going to drop off of the list and start making deals with the landlord going, oh, I'm sorry. Here you go. Let's settle. Let's get this out of the lineup, right? That's what I think is going to happen from this.
I think the bottom line is it's another nothing burger. They've also got the rental history of the rental unit.
This I don't understand. Explain this one to me. How does that help anybody? I was trying to think, actually. You've worked with me. If I'm buying a property, I always want to see what they paid for it. And some would argue that knowing this information is useless. And I would argue that I try and at least use it to my advantage. And I do put it into the mix. Does it work knowing it? Who the fuck knows? But does that translate into the rental market where you have like lineups of people?
Let's do a little role play here.
Okay, let's go. Who am I?
Daryl, you're the landlord.
I'm Daryl. I don't want to be Daryl. All right, fine. I'm Daryl the landlord.
You know, Daryl, you want $3,500 for this two bedroom here in North York.
Yeah, hold on. I'm just on the phone with another agent who's got me another potential.
But Daryl, I saw that you were only renting it out for $2,300. The last tenant back in 2016 paid. And I know they just left, but why do you want $3,500 right now?
You have somebody who wants to give me $3,900 for this place? Okay.
Daryl, I think it's unreasonable that you would ask that much more money compared to the last time. I'd like to make you an offer for $2,900. I think that's based on inflation, a reasonable increase over the last 8 years that you should be expecting for your rental unit.
You know, TK, you're such a nice guy. And it's really a pleasure having you around. And I know you're going to take really good care of my unit.
I am. And I'll pay on time.
$700 a month over the course of a year is really meaningless to me. And I'd much rather it be in your pocket than mine because, you know, my mortgage went up over the last couple of years and I don't really care about that.
I'll send you a Christmas card every year.
I know I can count on the Christmas card, TK. So
anytime you want to come over
and get out next month.
Anytime you want to come over, for a meal. My wife cooks amazing food. Please come over. Enjoy. Well, anytime.
You know, I'll come to your tent for $2,900 a month.
I would say that that would be a realistic conversation that would happen between a tenant and a landlord. Because
it'd probably be a little shorter than the one.
Nobody cares. Bottom line is, what's the market? So, you know, anyways, garbage. Rental,
all garbage. Tenants, garbage.
Bill of rights, renter's bill of rights, whatever it is. Will it help? Answer is no.
No, but thank it will you, not help.
Trudeau, for providing us with more reasons to doubt your leadership.
This Trudeau guy, right? Like, what? Yeah. What is he?
Even the conservatives are calling the measures meaningless.
Well, and so. I think that Ford in Ontario, and I don't know who the premier of Quebec is, but they've rejected this, saying that this is an overstep in jurisdiction and that this is not a federal issue. This is a provincial issue. And if you remember our very first issue, right?
Yeah.
This is housing is not a federal issue. And now all of a sudden, Uncle Trudeau, what's his name? Justin, Uncle Justin. That doesn't even sound right. This idiot is now trying to, save the day? Is this a save the day measure? This can't even be a save the day measure because TK called it a nothing burger.
It's political.
And tied
tenants
it to
feel
the
good.
Bridge
the tenants,
in Baltimore.
Tenants feel good. People vote on their feelings. They say, ooh, he cares. Ooh. Anyways, let's move on. Let's not talk about this.
Okay, let's move on.
If we could ever get an opportunity to talk to Trudeau, like I would tell him for sure that that tenant's Bill of Rights is not going to work. But anyways,
not going to work, not going to help. So did you hear, TK, that the Canadian population has surpassed 41 million now?
I heard this. And
this is absolutely.
Why are we surprised?
Nuttiness. Why are we surprised?
Yeah. Like if you add 40 million to 1 million, you get 41 million. Like, you know, this is simple math here, guys. We've been talking about it for a while.
That's a lot of people in the last.
Is it a lot of people? There's more people in Mexico City. But
there's more people in Mexico City?
I don't know what Mexico City's population is, but I'm sure it's probably pretty close to that.
Are you deflecting everything I say?
Mexico City's
for
no,
real?
Only 8.8 million. Damn.
41 million people, TK. When I remember, you know, seeing how close we were to 39 million not too long ago. And then it was like, boom. That's a lot of extra bodies to house and feed and keep healthy. And
we talked about this last week about the people who are willing to live in conditions that are not the same as you and me, you know, like, you know, you and I, we've been here our whole lives. We're not going to go and live in a house with seven or eight people. You know, we're not going to go live in a place where you're going to have, you know, one person per room, sharing the kitchen, sharing bathrooms, all that kind of stuff. To us, that's like, you know, we've been here long enough that we've got the privilege of being able to have that type of lifestyle, you know, and that's something that we probably take for granted. But when somebody moves here and they look at what their options are, they're going to say, you know what, I just need a place to sleep so that I can go to work, so that I can save my money, that I can send it home, so that I can buy a house, so I can do whatever they need to do. And so, you know, the housing crisis, although it is a crisis and prices are higher, you know, and then they need to be and what people can afford, we're actually not at that point where this extra population is going to put as much pressure on housing prices as we think.
Well,
I know that's not realtor talk. Realtor talk would be population is growing. People are going to be needing a place to live. Prices can only go up because we need more and more places. But these people can't afford these prices. And the interest rates aren't allowing anybody to go and borrow their way into home ownership.
And what I think is actually going to happen as a result of this massive immigration boost and the prices in certain areas is it's going to force Canada, Canadians, immigrants as well, to spread out throughout the country more because we're very concentrated. And our average prices are based on, you know, four cities, really, because the other ones do such little volume in comparison that they don't really move the needle, right? So
I don't think that that's going to be as... So do you know who moves to other parts of Canada?
People that are fed up with the parts they live in?
Exactly. The young Canadians. people who are able to go and get new jobs and all that kind of stuff. There are immigrants moving to other parts of Canada. Don't like we had Art on the show in New Brunswick. They have a lot of French African immigrants. We've got people moving to Calgary, Edmonton. There's new Canadians going to all parts of Canada, but the vast majority still want to come to Toronto. The vast majority still want to come to Vancouver, and that puts pressure on our infrastructure and the housing that we have here in existence. And so that's what I'm trying to get at is, even though we've got this huge increase in the population, it doesn't necessarily mean that we've got this major housing shortage. I know that there's people living on the streets and that there's obviously a need for housing, but at the end of the day, you know, most of those people probably do have options that they're not willing to look at. You know, maybe there's mental health issues, addiction, all that kind of stuff. That's why they're not able to go and look at those options. But at the end of the day, most people, what they do is they just find an affordable option for them. They go and live with multiple people in one home. You know, they go and rent a room. They go and find a place that is going to be suitable for their lifestyle that they can afford, you know, which, you know, renting a room right now, what, $700-$800 minimum?
A room, yeah.
A room.
A bed is $700-$800 in a room.
I think most people, if they're working a minimum wage job or something like that, they can afford the room rental of $700-$800. Right. And so that's what people will do. We'll just have more and more people living in each home. The number of people per household will increase. The issue that we've had over the last, you know, 30 years is that the number of people per household has been decreasing. Right. The baby boomers are getting older. And so that there's less and less people. Kids are growing up. They're moving out. And we got these big, huge houses with nobody living in them anymore. And so those will all start to change hands over time. And then we'll get back to more of a balance. So I guess the point that I'm trying to make is we aren't short as many homes as people claim, especially as much as the government claims. The province is talking about those $1.5 million homes as if, one, it's like, if we don't reach that goal, the world is going to end. And two, like, we actually will reach that goal, which they won't. You know, they're starting to count beds in seniors' residences and saying, we created more homes. And like the way that they're like calculating homes and stuff like that, they're like, well, there was a bed opened up in a senior's residence in freaking Parry Sound.
They're also counting 480 square foot two bedrooms as, you know, adding two bedrooms.
But these are the things that are I think misleading, right? Is that they've come up with this number, CMHC, you know, not a very reliable source for information, unfortunately. And their whole mandate is to be able to provide us this type of information, but they forecast things in such a negative way that I don't know if that's just part of their shtick and that they're just trying to be able to control, you know, markets and control certain dynamics that people are going to be using for, you know, their decisions on building. But we got a ton of properties coming up, power sale. There's a ton of development that's got approvals that nobody's building. We've we're in a state right now where I believe that, you know, we're not going to build a lot over the next 5 years. There isn't going to be a lot. We're going to have record numbers of immigration, and that, you know, prices aren't going to skyrocket like everyone theorizes, you know? So it's kind of like completely against the narrative. You know, everyone's kind of just like, well, if more people are coming in and we're not building any more houses, prices are going to go up. It just doesn't work like that. You know, people adjust, their lifestyles adjust, and that their expectations adjust, and that they find ways to be able to make their lifestyle work. And that's what people are doing, is as they come here, they're all shipping into one house and they're going, these are crazy prices. Why would I want to pay these? It doesn't make sense. I would rent right now. In my honest opinion, I would rent right now if I needed a place to live and I was going to just go out and live somewhere. Oh, and I was trying to figure out a, you know, an option as far as, you know, where do I want to land with my family and all that kind of stuff. I would rent, even though rents are sky high. I'm going to pay $40,000 a year for rent. Great. No problem. When you factor in interest and all those other things that are going to be associated with home ownership, all those other costs, you know, whether it be repairs, property taxes, insurance, all that kind of stuff. You're probably going to still be paying out 40 grand, at least just in not including the principal, obviously principal, you're going to be paying more than 40 grand a year, but take away the principal repayment aspect, just in those expenses, you're going to be paying more than $40,000 a year. And if the property value doesn't go up, you know, if it goes down, that's bad. But if it doesn't go up, all you've done is really paid off some of that principal, which is great. It's a forced savings. But if you just took that money and saved it yourself, you know, aside from paying your rent, you'd still have the same amount of equity, and then you can move wherever you want. So there isn't really a case right now that, for me, you know, based on my experience, is telling me like, hey, now's a great time to go and buy into this market, and you know, it's going to go up really soon, and that, you know, you're going to take advantage of the situation the way it is. I wouldn't give that advice right now. My advice to people who are buying as first-time buyers would be, you know, look at what your personal situation is, because, you know, maybe renting for a couple of years is the right move, and then you can buy later on and get into the market, you know, when it's you know, when you're sure that you want to live there. I'm just seeing too many people sell their homes right now who bought over the last couple of years, and you lose so much money when you don't have like a five-year plan to live in that house. If you have to sell within 5 years, over the history of the market, very few times people have been able to get their money back or profit. Most of the time, the market went up sort of marginally. And by the time you factored in all your expenses, real estate costs, you're losing money or you're breaking even. And it was kind of like, okay, well, why did you buy it then, right? 5 years or more, okay. I'd say most of the five-year periods, you did pretty well. There's very few period of times, like 1989 or maybe to 2022, you know, where if you bought at that time, the five-year plan wouldn't have worked. I'm saying way too many people get...
But when did that even become normal? Like, it used to be you bought a house and that was your house. And like, you didn't really move around much. Maybe if all of a sudden, you know, your life changed drastically. But like, most people just started flipping their house. Anyways, TK, did you give the code to the meeting to somebody else today? Because we're not really supposed to have a guest. And somebody's in the waiting room. And I don't know what's going on.
Well, we're using my personal link today, so... I've given it out to a lot of people.
Let's see.
We're recording on my personal page. We just got a call from you, so we're kind of wondering who it is that's calling us. Well, welcome to the Canadian Real Estate Show.
Well, I'm glad that you told me what I was meeting you for today. I'm very busy in Ottawa.
What are you doing in Ottawa? Is this Trudeau?
Again?
You guys, I visited you a couple months ago, and you should be grateful that I've blessed your presence once again.
Blessed our presence.
Blessed our presence. Prime Minister. I mean, surprised you'd come on this show, considering.
Yeah. Surprised that you, how much we are the number one Canadian real estate show out there. So, I mean, I guess if you're going to pick any show, it would be ours. But what's going on? Like, we were just talking about this, and I said I had a chance to talk to you about this new tenant's bill of rights or renter's bill of rights. Like, where did this come from?
Well, because we've got extra carbon taxes and more things to pay for that Canadians have to step up to, then it's just a matter of, you don't build a country overnight. These things take years. And so the Renter's Bill of Rights is going to be one of those things that demoralizes Canadians and helps them keep down so that we can bring in more immigrants to fill all the houses.
Well, that doesn't seem like that's a very
was maybe a little too strategy. Honest. Yeah.
Yeah. Why
is
why would you do that?
Well, someone slipped a bit of truth serum into my coffee this morning. What can I say?
Oh, really?
Well, this is a good time to have you on the show then, I suppose. So the idea of flooding in too many immigrants, where did that come from? And are you behind it?
Well, yes, because diversity is our strength, and 33 million people was not enough. So we need more people of different colors, and we need more queer, non-binary people, let's say, on construction jobs. We need more petite Latina garbage truck drivers. Yeah. And, you know, it's, for example, metal bands. Heavy metal bands are dominated by straight white males, and that's not the kind of Canada we need to build.
Agreed.
I don't think there's too many people that could disagree with that.
Too many straight white males in the heavy metal industry.
We're
obviously in a housing crisis, and I mean, interest rates right now are at, you know, near 20-year highs. You know, we've got something that I believe is causing a lot of pressure on people. And inflation is just one of the topics. I mean, how do you guys expect to be able to get Canadians back on track with their debt payments and with their lifestyles? I don't see an end to this.
look, I know that times are tough for Canadians. They've never been more difficult. Yet we have to roll up our sleeves from coast to coast to coast and get through these turbulent times. And we can do this together by putting things on our credit card, you know, taking 150-year mortgages, and just the fiscal budget will balance itself. And Canadians will have to take more jobs to pay for their mortgages and rents. But we can do this.
What are you personally committing to this economic equation, Mr. Trudeau?
Well, I'm working on improving the climate and making it gooder.
Mm.
Is that through the carbon tax? I mean, I feel like taxing us in order to be able to use less fuels and then just refunding us the money doesn't really incentivize us to use less carbon fuels.
People need to burn wood in their backyard and use simpler, older methods instead of all these expensive, fancy polycarbon fuels that they're using.
When you believe a tax is gonna prevent us from
Even though Canada is only 3% of the world's landmass, our carbon tax will save the planet, and it'll even help with male pregnancies.
That's a problem.
Do you often mistake Fidel Castro for your father?
I don't know anything. I don't know what you're talking about. I talked to him earlier this morning, but that's a different story.
Now, right now, the election's going to be coming up next year. And so a lot of people are, you know, the polls are showing that your favoritism is starting to slip, you know, that the Conservatives might regain power in next year's election and could even get a majority government. What are you guys doing to prevent that?
No chance, yeah.
Listen, my father was in power for 16 years, and I was born with a Nickelback spoon in my mouth, and this is a piece of cake. We can do this because Pierre says axe the tax and a few slogans while he's eating his apples. But we all know that to make Canada great again, we have to have the Liberal Party and myself, Justin, to continue to work together, to step up and do what's right for this country.
Do you think that the country's in a better state right now compared to when you first took power?
Look, we've never seen better numbers. The Canada is third in the overall, the ranking of all the countries in the world. We've got better GDP to debt ratio than ever before.
I don't think the idea is to have that go higher as better. Do you have any tricks for us common folk that help you overcome the voice of Chrystia Freeland?
Chrystia's my good friend. I hope you don't make fun of her on this show.
Never once, actually. We do appreciate her role. We're going into, obviously, the spring market in real estate. You know, is the federal government, are they watching the major cities' real estate markets in order to be able to, you know, decide on what policies might be needed for Canadians? Or is that not something that's on your radar?
Well, I've been talking to Joe Biden a little bit, and he's in agreement with me just to let the borders be open and let all the immigrants flood in. Because they're the ones who are taking the jobs, the difficult jobs, to build these better homes using their construction skills and carpenter skills to build glass houses and concrete cement homes. And I saw you bobbing there, Daryl. That's not very kind. That's not very Canadian.
Are you even Canadian?
I don't really feel like I want to be Canadian anymore, to be honest with you. Wasn't I just saying that before we had him on? I think I feel like a lot of other people that you've destroyed our country, and that I would rather leave here than stay and, you know, endure this for much longer. You're not leaving very many reasons for us born in Canada, Canadians, to really stay behind you and the government right now.
Well, if we can just honor that we're living on the ceded territory of the Muckluck and Nuckluck people, then we can realize that with their strengths and our help of taking their land, we can work together and come to a common denominator. Well, I'm not very good at, I'm good at multiplying, but I'm even better at dividing.
That's true. You were a math teacher.
The Arrive Can app, debacle.
I used it.
Right?
I mean, shameful.
That's a lot of money that was used to be able to develop that app and that company. You know, two guys in a basement with $250 million of IT contracts with the federal government. Like, how can you justify that? Where did
what
that money really
is
go?
That money right now? Where did you send it?
The money was needed to do the thorough research because we can't risk disinformation coming to airports in the way of old grandmas, you know, pretending that they're someone else. We need to know who they are and to get all the information on their medical passports and their medical history so that we can decide whether to let them into the country or not, because we have too many grandmas lying about their status and, you know, pretending to be Indigenous or other colors that they're not.
But $57 million for an app that they were able to build in like 2 days.
Wasn't it $250 million?
That was the company overall, their contracts, but just the app alone was $57 million. How do you justify? What do you say to Canadians when they say that $57 million could have been used to, you know, fund the province and you know, help them with their projects with housing and roads and schools and healthcare?
Well, I need to be able to pay for my vacations and I have to be able to launder that money somehow. Otherwise, how am I going to pay for all my lifestyle and for Christia's lifestyle? And Christia's chiropractor, after all her bobbing her head around.
Now, there's rumors right now spreading that you and Christia Freeland are dating. Is there any validity to those rumors?
I didn't even hear that one.
Christia, we do a little role playing, you know. Sometimes I identify as a woman and she'll identify as a man, and we kind of have a little fun that way. But again, the truth serum is working a little bit too well today.
A little overdrive there with the truth serum. Maybe we should just end it right there. I think that's a great place to end
discussion. We appreciate you calling us in, though, Prime Minister
Thanks
Trudeau.
And the record,
I mean, if you're still the Prime Minister coming up, because you know there's a lot of people right now who are coming to the conclusion that you may not be fit to be our Prime Minister anymore. But if you're still our Prime Minister, we'd like to have you back on the show sometime soon in the near future.
Well, I just know that I need to destroy the country while I still have the chance. And communism rules the best ever.
I don't think you'll have a problem with that.
You've done a good job so far, if that's the goal. And now that I hear it, it does seem like we are heading in the direction of that particular goal. Well done, sir.
Congratulations.
You have hit the target. Thank you once again. And I don't know that we got anywhere with that, TK.
But we do look forward to the next time you call into our show.
Absolutely.
I'm glad I could make the time for my busy vacation schedule.
Yes, thank you. And I guess it was a pretty clear signal, so I'm assuming you're not on a private jet or some form of jet at the moment that we're paying for.
It's in an Airbnb.
Airbnb in, that we're paying for?
Down south.
Yes, but what I like about it is there's plenty of black makeup here to put on my face later.
Oh, boy.
Hopefully there's a party for you to go to.
All right. Have a good day, sir.
Merci.
Merci.
I don't know how he got our number. But,
I don't know why we let him in.
Yeah, but I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised that Trudeau's got some answers to the
truth serum there,
to the questions that we asked him, and that unfortunately they're not the answers that people want to hear right now. You know, he's got a big target on his back. That guy, you know,
he does.
When he goes to events, people are screaming and yelling at him. They're really not happy with him.
Well, if the goal isn't to anger everyone, then I don't know what the hell's going on, because there's really nothing that makes any sense anymore. So TK, okay, so let's recap here, okay? We've got the Baltimore Bridge Big Nothing Burger, Solar Eclipse Big Nothing Burger, the Renter's Bill of Rights, maybe the biggest nothing burger.
Yeah,
we got population growth, another nothing burger. We had the Prime Minister of Canada on, and that seemed to be the biggest nothing burger, because that guy's a useless
not doing tool. Anything.
That's for sure. It's surprising that he's in power, because it seems like everywhere else it's like really old people that they must have something serious on this guy to have so much control over him at such a young age. We know about some crappy things he's done. He must have a list that we don't know about why would somebody do this to a country, TK? I don't get it. Anyways,
I don't think it's about
something intense. Weird's going on.
I think it's just about the stage was set. I mean, Canadians had a lot of issues going back many, many years. You know, we were heavily indebted. We had really bad spending habits. We looked at our homes as a financial vehicle to be able to finance our retirements. We had so many opportunities in the past where we could bail ourselves out. You know, you build up your credit card, refinance, get rid of that debt. Buy out your car payment, fail your business, borrow from your mortgage. We've been doing this for so long, and that there's a big difference between the way that Canadians spend money and how they interact with debt compared to other countries all over the world,
Right, because they're working under the assumption.
Africa, South America, pretty much everywhere uses their home and the equity in their land in a much different way than we do. And it's unhealthy. And we need to break this trend, I'm telling you, for our kids, sure, for the people who are still here, for the people who want to move here in the future. We got to break this trend and stop being so heavily focused on warehousing people, and build actual businesses and get back down to reality here. But unfortunately, prices just don't go back down. Prices don't crash the way that people are expecting. What they do is they stagnate, and that just over time, people will just, eventually say to themselves, I can't pay any more than this. Well, one guy paid last year for that. Okay, so maybe I'll pay that price. And so that it kind of stagnates. But the pressure, upward pressure on pricing, in my opinion, is gone from the market. In my opinion, I'm seeing it on the front lines. I'm dealing with the people. I'm seeing what type of situations they're in. I'm hearing their situations as far as how they're going to borrow money and how much debt they can get. I know what their options are. And I know that there's just a ton more people. I think in the development space too, Daryl, I think you need to be careful as well too. I think that there's a ton of developers who are out of cash. They got no more cash flow left. They can't service those debts. There's going to be more and more people putting development land, zoned, ready to build development land on the market, because they aren't able to do what they need to do to complete the project. And that is going to be something that we're going to see a lot more of. And that there's also going to be a lot more, there's more power sales right now. We got RBC and Scotiabank putting up a lender type of power sales lately, I've noticed. So that's something that is new. It's not just the private lenders and Mix and B lender guys who are all trying to get their money back, but there's a huge increase in people who just can't afford those payments anymore, and those payments aren't going down anytime soon, and that the debt is there. It's 30-year debt. Like, it's not like it's like 3 years goes by and now it's at a manageable point. At the end of the 5-year first the term of your 5-year 30-year amortized mortgage, the end of the 5-year term, you have paid off maybe 3 or 4% of your loan, a very small amount.
Because it's front loaded with a bunch of interest, right? As well. Right.
And so you're just like, what have I done? Like, I haven't even, taken a chip out of the principal here. How am I going to be able to get out of this? And it's demoralizing as people hang on to that debt and people pay those payments over and over again. And each year they get a statement that says they haven't made any progress on their principal repayment. And that, they're struggling every single month. They're working two jobs. It's demoralizing. When you're sure. when you're in a home, okay, and you're working three jobs and you see that your neighbor just sold for $100,000 more than you bought it for, and you see that you've paid down your principal $50,000 a year, and that you've made all these huge monumental achievements, you start to like feel really good about yourself. You say, wow, you know, this home ownership thing is really great. And I'm thankful that I'm working my tail off in order to be able to pay the bills for me and my family. It makes it very rewarding. Okay. That's why we're in this mess. But when times go, and this has happened in the Great Recession in the States, and this happened in the 90s, and people are watching that equity decrease, they're watching the value of their homes go down, they're seeing that they're not making any progress on their principal payments, they're working a couple jobs, it doesn't last forever. You do that for 2 years and you're spent. You're spent. You do that for 6 months and you're spent, but you know, maybe you can weather the storm. And after the end of the 2 years, and these are the people I'm dealing with right now, at the end of the 2 years, you're going, I can't do this anymore. And you're willing to make any decision necessary in order to relieve yourself of that stress, because you're not sleeping, your health, you've got major health issues, and that you really have impacted your life. And that's what we're going through. There's no denying that. I am not the pumper that I'm accused of being. I am 100% a realist. I'm dealing with the people right now who are out there struggling, and that there's more and more of them coming on the market. 100%. They need to sell. And they're in disguise, some of them too. You know, like even the one I sold this week, one of them I sold this week, the person didn't really disclose to me a lot of stuff, but all the signs were there. You know, like I want a short closing, and you know, if I can't do this, then I have to do this. Like all those little things are there, but they didn't want to get into some of the details with me. But I know for sure that they couldn't go any further carrying that property anymore. You know, even though sure. they come across as being, you know, very stable and you know, comfortable, but that's not the case.
As you get closer to the deadline, it gets a little bit less like that. I'm exactly. sure.
And luckily the spring market is giving people a little bit of satisfaction. The prices that I'm getting people right now are everybody's happy with, you know, so that's good. But at the end of the day, it's not going to last forever. The spring market will disappear. Everyone's going to go away again in the summer. And those people, those problems that they have haven't gone away. So now they'll be coming to me in the summer saying, oh my gosh, I need to list now. Right.
But I thought sales were considerably down right now.
We're still in a low inventory environment. There's still not a lot of options for people.
But I thought I saw that inventory was getting up there and that sales were definitely down in the last few weeks.
We'll see what the March numbers come up. And I can tell you, because of March break and all that kind of stuff, that sales weren't like crazy this month at all. But as far as like anecdotally, there's still not a lot of inventory for people to choose from, you know, and I'm selling everything that I'm putting on the market at the right price. I'm selling it within a week.
And like do everything. We still have multiple offers?
Yeah. Everything in the city, the stuff that I'm selling, I'm getting multiple offers on.
And so right now, how big a kiss of death is it to price it too high and to have it not sell?
It doesn't sell.
And then that's what it though? Is. That's what
then
I'm
you
saying.
Have to drop your price, and depending on what the market does, right? So like I listed one this week where I feel like the price is not as good as it could be. But it's a really, it's a unique house. Everyone says it's a unique house, but really it is. There's
it's not as low as it could be. When you say good, do you mean low?
No. Yeah. Or like high? I as accurate as it could be. Okay. I think it's on the high side. Yeah. High side. And so okay. I'm getting showings. I just listed it. So I don't have a lot of data here, but I'm getting showings. It's way bigger than all the other houses on the market. The lot's way bigger than all the other houses on the market. So if somebody wants that, then, you know, this is the only option that they've got. But just based on like the sales and everything else like that, I wouldn't have made this decision as my first decision. But I went over everything with them, so you know they know what's up. But these are the type of scenarios where you know you may not sell, and then you got to sit down with them and say okay. And then the whole point, the whole skill of being an agent is to understand, you know, the situation, because you know at the end of the day, you know, like this is the truth. You know, you're trying to help people, but some people are beyond help. You know, some people, they need to go and they need to try something their way in order to see if it works, you know, and that way you can show it to them and then they can say, okay, TK, I believe you now. And even though it costs them money, you know, if you say no to all those people, you're in business. Like this is your job, is to be able to help people, you know, buy and sell. You know, if you just walk around saying, screw you, you're not willing to do it my way. I don't want to work with you. Well, you're probably not going to get all the business that you could. And so sometimes you got to go into the situation and warn them and explain to them why other agents will tell them X, Y, and Z. And you kind of go on that ride with them, you know, but very rarely does that happen to me, to be honest with you. Most people are like reasonable people where, you know, if you show them enough evidence, they go, okay, with me pricing it here. It's just in those unique situations. Like I got a land deal that's coming up in April. And the guy's totally unrealistic, but, you know, I got to show him. I want him to, I really care that he is, 100% sure that his land's not worth what the price he thinks it is. Because I know
it's so much easier to be sure in an up market than a weird, wobbly, up and down kind of.
Bottom line is, if it's worth it, people will make you offers. You know, if you're worth that number and you list it on the market, then you will get offers for that number. That's what happens. That's what the market does. You know, it exposes it to the people who it needs to be exposed to. And if we're marketing it and then it's on the MLS and then you've got your other, you know, things happening in the background through your contacts, then that's enough people for you to be able to have empirical data to bring back to the client and say, hey, this is what you're worth. This is the bottom line. This is what the market's telling you. And there's lots of situations like that. No agent can tell you, I list every property at the right price every time and I get it sold because I'm the best. Doesn't happen.
And so when you're a buyer nowadays and you're saying that there's limited inventory for people to pick from, like I remember when we were looking to buy a house, our area that we wanted to live in, you know, was X, and it didn't take very long for that area to grow and then grow again and then grow again. So how picky are people actually being with the location?
Buyers have three things that they make their decision on. One is price. The other one is the type of home. And the third one is location. The price is generally speaking, not that flexible. You know, you got a down payment, you got a mortgage approval. Like very few people have that flexibility where they could say, I'll just go and spend $200,000 more than I planned on it. But that does exist. The next one is type of home. So if I'm going to go and buy a detached home with four bedrooms, cause I got a dog and kids and all that kind of stuff, I'm not too flexible in the type of home I need. I got a family. I need to have room for them to be able to live. And that's the type of home that I'm comfortable living in and that my family is going to wait until we find an option that suits us. So the third one is the most easy compromise to make, which is location, right? And so the problem is you got a bunch of people who are sitting in the city who are all looking for a property. They've got a champagne taste but beer budget, so they're all sitting in the city waiting for that perfect home. They're like High Park detached for $1.8 million. I'm gonna find it. This is gonna be great, right? And so they wait around looking for that home. They probably have an agent, their cousin, their brother, whatever. But last year 51% of agents sold one house or less. So what are the odds that that agent is actually doing anything to try to help them find other areas? Probably not very good. And so what happens is they need to be exposed to an area outside of their search. That is going to be, I'm totally giving a sales pitch now, but they need to be exposed to an area outside of their search criteria that is going to provide them a home that's within their budget that is going to meet their needs. And then all of a sudden they go, holy smokes, I didn't know I could get so much of a house. Because when you leave the Toronto core and you move to Thornhill or you move to Whippy or whatever, you get a lot more for your money.
Yeah.
Right. And so
some places, yeah.
That's what you need to do is you need to be able to find a buyer like that who's coming from an area that is going to be more central, that's more expensive. So when they come to see your property, their perception of value is higher, and they look at your property and they say, oh my God, I can't believe that I'm getting so much. The issue is that buyers, they don't have time to go and look at 15,000 listings because that's how many are on the MLS, right? So they have to be either an agent guides them, which is the buyer agent's job. Call up your buyer, similar to what you and I are doing, but you know, in a general buyer sense. I sold a condo townhouse this week, and the guy was all over the place. I wanted him to be near the subway because of his work schedule. He's taken me to different places for pricing, but I ended up finding him one that was near the subway. We bought that one, and so it was location. You know that I was playing with location. He was playing with something else. I was playing with. He's got a budget. He's got a type of home. What location can I get him that's going to be the best for him, right? And that's my job as an agent. But most agents aren't working that hard, to be honest with you. And so on the seller side is how do you make sure that you end up getting that buyer to know that your property is for sale? And if it just goes on the MLS, it means that you miss out on a lot of buyers who have no idea that your house exists because they're not looking in the area that you're listed in.
Right. That's what I'm trying to figure out is like, how stubborn are people being before they expand their search into something that, you know, a few weeks ago they would never have even considered. It's like, I'm not going north of Steeles. Are you crazy?
I want to give you an example, though. I want to give you an example just because it's your example, right? How many homes did you look at that where you live right now? How many homes did you look at in that area specifically before you bought the home that you're in?
Zero.
You looked at one and you bought it because you went from another area. And as soon as you saw that one, you said, oh my God, it's everything that I want. And you bought it. That's how buyers are. And so when you're a listing agent, when you're an agent who's taking care of the seller's needs, which is try to get them the most amount of money, you want to attract a buyer from another area who's inexperienced, who doesn't know, you know, the sales, who hasn't looked at 100 houses there. And so when they come there, that feeling they get when they walk through the door is, oh my gosh,
this I can is get
the
this.
Biggest yeah. house I've seen. It's the most renovated house. It's got the biggest backyard. It's got a pool. I got to have it. Buyers are impatient. They can't wait. And if nothing else comes up within the 12 to 36 hours that they're going to make that decision on making the offer, or if there's an offer date or whatever it is, they're going to buy that house. And most
likely, is the environment the same as back when I was buying? Is it like,
no matter what, the buying process is the same.
Because I remember saying to my wife, like, okay, something new came up, we got to go see it now. Like,
it's similar to that. It's always like that when you're the buyer, because like the one guy I was working with this week, he was, you know, really nice, like sweet guy. I was like super protective of him because you could just see he was inexperienced with stuff. And like he's like, they've got an open house. He's like, the open house, the buyers could buy it. There could be multiple offers from their open house. I'm like, chill. Like, the open house, no one's showing up to the open house. Don't worry, we're gonna get this place. It's not a big deal. But like his perception was some other buyer's gonna get it. And it was true. There was not a lot of listings available. There was not a lot of options for him to buy. We were only looking at one or two houses at a time because there wasn't really many places coming up. So
how do people say that more supply isn't the solution? Because it seems to me that if we had more options in the area that we wanted to live in,
to build a new home, the costs are so high. So that new supply isn't cheaper. Yes, new supply is in the baby boomers all move into the condos because we built a bunch of condos, and then the housing supply will increase. That'll definitely help the detached housing market. But either way, Gerald, this conversation is great. I love talking to you.
As always, TK.
We're at the end of, our show.
You're at the end of the show. I'm going under the knife, TK. Maybe the last show ever.
I don't believe that whatsoever.
Haven't been canceled. No, I can use my left arm. TK?
You'll be fine. Today was another great show. Thank you to our guest, Justin Trudeau. Thank you to our host, Daryl and TK. If you're still listening, we love you. Go to the Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Give us a rating.
Instagram.
Follow us. Review. Instagram. Clips channel. Everything.
All of the above.
Do it all.
Do it all.
See you guys next week.